Welcome to The Owlish Folk, a podcast that answers questions about the English language. I'm Dave, and Amanda, my croupish co-host, is off sick today. She's sick, she's under the weather, she is croupish, she has croup, she has terribly sore throat, so she cannot record today. But she promises that she'll be back next time, as long as she is in defervescence. Defervescence is literally to cease boiling, but we can use it to mean when a fever subsides, when you're cold and shivery and sweaty, you're suffering fever symptoms. As that subsides, we can say it's defervescence. So on the show, we usually talk about questions sent in by listeners. However, I think your questions definitely deserve Amanda's attention. And since she's not here, I'm not going to answer a question today. Instead, I'm going to treat this episode as, rather than an Owlish Folk episode, a miniature owlette. Maybe an owl pelt. A little additional episode with some hopefully fun pelts of information that will be interesting to you. And since Amanda is sick, the theme for all of these little nuggets of information is illness. So I'll start today with a nursery rhyme. Ring a ring of roses, a pocket full of posies, a tissue, we all fall down. And probably everyone knows this, I would guess. Maybe you've learned a different version of it. Maybe you know a version that has some slightly different words. Maybe ring around the roses. Maybe a bottle full of posies. Maybe ashes, ashes, or hush, hush, we all fall down. But very similar, along a theme. And growing up in Britain, I learned the ring a ring of roses, a pocket full of posies, a tissue, we all fall down. I learned that version. And I have a very clear memory of being in elementary school, and my teacher at the time, Mrs. Keating, told us the origin of this. She told us what this nursery rhyme is about. And actually, I think most people were told the same thing. And I know that our memories from when we're young are a little unreliable, to say the least. But when we're told things when we're young, when we're kids, especially by adults we trust, especially by teachers and parents, we tend to believe them when we can hang on to these beliefs until we're adults without ever questioning them. So I assumed what Mrs. Keating, my elementary school teacher, had told me was right. So I was told that this was a nursery rhyme about the Black Death, about the Great Plague of 1665. And a ring a ring of roses describes the symptoms of the plague, the red circles that would appear on the flesh of people suffering from plague. And a pocket full of posies describes the flowers people put in their pockets to disguise the smell of the disease they were suffering from. A tissue, you sneeze when you have the disease, and then we all fall down, you die. And I believe a third of the people who contracted plague died in the 1665 outbreak. I'm sure many people were told the same story. And it seems to have been a great myth that's been spread. But it seems to fit, right? I mean, the symptoms and the measures people took to hide the symptoms, and then ending with falling down dead. It makes sense if kids were experiencing this, or parents wanted to raise kids' awareness of the symptoms they should look for. This is going to express itself in culture, in songs and rhymes. But turns out I was wrong. And through researching this show, I've found a few areas I've been wrong. I found a lot of the assumptions I had about the origins of phrases and the meanings of certain words and sayings were wrong. And I just assumed that what I had learned when I was young was right. So this is a great example of that. So what does it really mean? Well, it seems if this does date back to 1665, I'm sure it would have been in the culture at the time and probably written down. But the earliest recorded use, or the earliest record of Ring a Ring of Roses, or Ring Around the Roses, the rhyme, goes back only as far as 1790. And rather than being about the plague, it seems to be more likely it's just a game kids would play outside together when they're picking flowers. And you can imagine that, perhaps more easily than you can imagine them singing about plague, right? You can imagine kids dancing in a circle, ring a ring a rosy, ring around the roses, rather than a pocket full of posies, which could be just putting flowers in your pocket. It might have been a bottle full of posy or a bucket full of posy. And then a tissue, asha, asha, hush, hush. It could have just been a nonsense phrase and then we all fall down. It's part of a game. Kids dancing round, playing, falling over. This is how kids play. A lot of kids' games have points where you have to stop and people have to stand still or hit the floor or do certain actions at certain times. And maybe that was a part of this rhyme. Now, I'm pretty sure that Amanda doesn't have plague, but she might be experiencing a very common side effect from illness, which is vomiting. And we have a lot of euphemisms for vomit, to puke, to spew. And this is true of a lot of kind of disgusting actions our body takes, or a lot of our more unpleasant bodily functions. We dress them up in euphemisms and softer terms to hide the more clinical terms. So puke and spew and hurl and chuck and upchuck. But puke and spew are, I think, probably the most common ways we would describe this, the most common words for vomiting. Spew comes from Old English, spewen, meaning to spit, and it's probably onomatopoeia, spewen. And vomit is like a huge spit. And puke comes probably from German, apparently first recorded in English in Shakespeare's As You Like It, related to the German spuken, also meaning to spit. And vomiting is a huge spit. But what about another word, chunder? Chunder is another word that gives you that feeling of vomiting, almost onomatopoeia. And I always thought chunder came from Australia, from people riding passenger ships. And the passengers on the upper deck of the ships would get seasick. And then as they felt desperately unwell, they could feel their stomach churning. They would look over the rail and down to the decks below and they would say, "Watch under!" And then they would vomit or spew or puke over the rail down onto the deck below. But they were polite enough to shout this warning, "Watch under, watch under, watch under, watch under." And we can imagine if you're desperate to vomit, you probably don't have time to get the whole phrase out. You might not have time for "watch under," just "chunder." And we can easily imagine how this would get shortened just to "chunder." And this is a really neat story, maybe neater than the real story. So I always thought this was the case. This was where it came from. But it turns out I was wrong. This isn't where it came from. It does, however, come from Australia. And there was a series of adverts in a Sydney newspaper called The Bulletin from 1909. And these adverts were for Blyth and Blatt's Cobra Boot Polish. And the adverts were drawn by an Australian artist called Norman Lindsay. And they featured a character called Chunderloo of Akim Fu. And the character, Chunderloo, became really popular and eventually got his own series of stories called The Adventures of Chunderloo. And he became popular. So this was in the early 1900s. And by 1916, he had his own story, his own series of stories. And in the First World War, soldiers may have read these stories for entertainment. And disease in the battlefield was absolutely rife. And so these soldiers would have read these stories and sometimes they would have been sick and they would have wanted to spew. And Chunderloo became rhyming slang for spew. I'm going to spew. I'm going to Chunderloo. I'm going to chunder. And we can see how this would happen, how this would take shape. Then from there, it seems that this phrase became very popular among private school kids in the 1960s and it spread through the culture and the surf culture and young people started using this euphemism for vomiting, chunder. And now it seems everyone knows it. But I was wrong. The origin wasn't wachunder. It was chunderloo spew. The last little nugget I want to share today is, again related to illness, kind of. If you're going to vomit or puke or spew or chunder, you want to run to the toilet. You want the privacy and you want to throw up in the toilet. So, as with bodily functions, we like to use euphemisms to describe the toilet. We talk about maybe just the bathroom or the restroom or the washroom or the WC, the water closet, or the loo. Now, I was under the impression, I must have been told this at some point when I was much younger and more impressionable, that loo came about because in large buildings, room 100 was always the room for the toilet, or the room for the toilet was always numbered room 100. And 100, the number, kind of looks like an L-O-O, and so it took on the nickname loo, which sort of makes sense. Okay, I buy that. Why would it not be that? However, there are other theories about the origin of this term, and the room 100 is not the most likely. So, one idea is it could come from the French term regardez-le, which means, and my French is terrible, but regardez-le means look out for the water, watch the water. So, in medieval times, people may have urinated in pots and then emptied the pot out of the window, and as a warning to people, regardez-le, look out for the water. They don't want to throw pee on the people walking past. So it's just a polite way to warn people. It could have come from this. Regardez-le becomes loo. It sort of makes sense. And now, why would people have used a French term? Well, of course, after the invasion of England by the French in 1066, French was spoken fairly widely in England. It tended to be more by the wealthier folk. And it was also used in government. But it could easily be the case that a French phrase was picked up and used in this way. And then after French was not used anymore, that phrase was still attached to using the toilet. But as it decayed, loo just meant the toilet. It makes sense. But it could also be that the word loo comes again from French, but the French term le loo, just meaning the place, as a kind of euphemism, a gentle term for the place where we go to toilet. Le loo, the place, loo. And perhaps this is where loo came from. Again, it makes sense. Now, the problem with both of these theories coming from of loo coming from French is that they're not supported by written evidence from the time. Yeah, another idea is that this is short for Lady Louisa. And Lady Louisa was the wife of the Earl of Lichfield in the 1800s. And in 1867, the Earl of Lichfield and his wife, Lady Louisa, went to visit some friends. And she was pretty unpopular, was Lady Louisa. And while they were visiting these friends, they were staying over. And somebody took the nameplate off her door, the door of the room she was staying in. And they put the nameplate on the door to the toilet. So it said Lady Louisa on the toilet door, and people started joking about that. Ha ha, we're going to the Lady Louisa, when they were going to the toilet. Ha ha, we're going to the Lady Lou. Ha ha, we're going to the loo. And that name just stuck. And in the circles they moved in, people all started calling the toilet the Lady Lou, the loo. And then it spread from there into popular culture. Now, I find that very, very hard to believe, but I really love it as a story. However, perhaps though the most likely explanation is that loo is short for Waterloo. Waterloo was the name printed on some ceramic toilets. And extra support for this comes from James Joyce in Ulysses in 1922, where he writes, "Oh yes, Monloo, how much cost? Waterloo? Water closet." Now, maybe James Joyce was using Waterloo to mean water closet, which does mean the toilet, WC, water closet. And loo is not seen in print before 1922. So maybe he's either using something that people were already saying, already using Waterloo to mean water closet, or maybe he started using it in that way. But since it's not recorded earlier than that, we could say this is traceable to James Joyce. And This leads very neatly into our next episode. When Amanda is back, we will talk about James Joyce in a lot more detail. Some things he wrote and about how he wrote, because that connects with next week's really excellent question. So, hopefully that's a little teaser for next week. If you're into James Joyce, then I think you'll really enjoy it. If not, then definitely listen anyway, because as an outsider to Joyce's work, the way Amanda describes it makes it absolutely fascinating. So I hope you've enjoyed this shorter Owlish Folk, this little owlet, and I'll be back with Amanda next time. Thanks to Justing for the music, New Media for the artwork, and a big high five to Jeff at Central Sound and Picture.
If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and subscribe. You can contact us on Facebook and Twitter at The Owlish Folk. Send us questions or comments to theowlishfolk@gmail.com.